five, presentation by Siegel regarding the application of administrative expenses under GADSB 67 and GADSB 68. Do these guys just have, are they required to meet a certain number of times a year, and as a result of those meetings, they're required to come up with something?
No, this is not anything new from GADSB. This is when you start to implement a major overhaul, like the new GADSB rules, you find stuff. You know, you find like, well, you know, here's something that GADSB does that isn't consistent with the way you are doing your funding calculations. And so two things happen. One is, and I'll go through this in the body of the letter, is, you know, if there are some advantages to having some parts of these two calculations consistent and you come up with a little inconsistency, is it worth taking action to make them consistent? But the other thing is, I think that even though it was not GASB's intent, by focusing our attention, that is your consulting actuary's attention, on this question of administrative expenses, we think it raises a point that is worthy of the board's revisiting it. Okay. I think what you'll find, so again, there's two things here. One is trying to manage the GASB implementation in a way that is as consistent as reasonably possible with your valuation. That's the first motivation here. And the second, though, is even putting that aside, when you start looking into how you are currently funding administrative expenses, you might find yourself wondering, you know, number one, I didn't know we were doing that. And, you know, and if you didn't know you were doing it, is there a more transparent, that's the word I'm going to use over and over, is there a more transparent way to deal with administrative expenses when you're setting the contribution policy? So there are really two reasons we think to go after this, initiated by GASB, but also we just think this is something that it would be appropriate for you to review.
Okay.
So, Paul Angel with the CEO Company, joined by my colleague John Monroe.
Welcome again.
Thank you. So the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, I'm going to sort of just walk through the letter. They have, you know, they've adopted these new rules. Now, you know, there's been a lot of talk, and now I'm really doing now the background, the bottom of page one, the top of page two. There's been a lot of talk about how GASB has decoupled expensing from funding. And there's also, you know, you've been told often by us and others that the new GASB rules do not require you to change anything in your funding policy. Okay? But on that first one, the idea that GASB has separated funding from accounting, you know, it's true and it's also not so true. That is, it's true at one level, but there is one aspect, and a very important aspect of the new GASB rules, that in fact are fully compatible and consistent with the way that you do your funding. So, you know, we just talked about funding policy. You know, I said the first thing you do is, you know, under your cost method is you measure the liabilities. Okay. And then the next thing you do is you have an amortization policy that tells you how much of that unfunded liability you need to have your employers contribute this year. Well, the crucial thing about GASB is, and this is the bullet at the bottom of the first page, when it comes to measuring the liability, both the discount rate and the cost method, GASB chose the approach that is used universally for funding. Now, believe me, they were lobbied hard not to do that. You may be familiar with the economists out there who think that we should be valuing our liabilities the way the market prices bonds. We should be using a 3% risk-free discount rate. Okay, those economists went after GASB and tried to get GASB to have that be the standard for measuring liabilities, and they lost at GASB. So GASB actually sided with the actuarial approach, which is you base your discount rate on expected return. So that's right there. That's one thing that could have been different between your funding liabilities and your accounting liabilities. But in fact, GASB ruled in our favor, so now they're the same. Same thing with the cost method. The economists would have you value your liabilities by saying, well, what if we froze service today, froze salaries today, calculated an accrued benefit, and did a present value of that accrued benefit. That's how they would measure the liabilities. And they told GASB to do it that way. GASB turned them down. Said, no, we're going to look at projected benefits, calculate a level cost under the entry age method.
Well, so it's probably worth noting that that would produce a much lower liability.
Well, it would produce a lower liability, although it would be more than offset by the lower discount rate.
The interest assumption.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the things that, you know, that doesn't get described, is that this level cost is actually more conservative. It accrues the cost faster, so it actually assigns more cost to the early years of service. So we have these two wins. GASB is basically saying, when it comes to measuring the liability, you can measure the liability for accounting the same way you measure the liability for funding. Now, that's one less thing for you to have to explain to the world out there. It means, for example, your funded ratio. Your funded ratio on a market value basis, which we publish in our report, your funded ratio for funding on a market value basis will be exactly the same as your funded ratio for accounting. So when people start saying, why are there two different costs here, you can say, look, we're measuring the obligation exactly the same way. Now, on the next page at the top, when it comes to changes in that liability, right? We just reaffirmed your funding policy that says, generally, changes in the liability can be recognized over 18-year period for funding. GASB took a much tighter approach. GASB said that changes in liability for accounting will be recognized over the remaining service life of the members involved in that change in liability. Example we like to use is if you adopt a longer mortality table for your retired liabilities, so your retired liability goes up by 10%, let's say that's $500 million, $500 million, just made up number. So what GASB says is that for expensing, you're going to recognize that $500 million change over the remaining service life of your retired members. Now, this is a trick question. What's the remaining service life of your retired members? Come on.
Zero.
Which means GASB says that entire $500 million will be expensed in the year it occurs. No amortization, no deferral, no smoothing, no nothing. Now, that's going to be a very volatile expense measure. There's nothing we can do about that. But when we get to, we're in the GASB regime, and you have two different cost numbers. You got your contributions, your funding costs, and you got your expense, your accounting cost. We could be in the following situation. People say, why are they different? And you'd be able to say, well, first of all, we measure the liability the same way. The only difference is that GASB recognizes the changes really fast, whereas we recognize we fund the changes over 18 years. Relatively easy to explain the difference. Well, so here comes GASB with one little wrinkle that's going to upset the apple cart as far as the liabilities matching. You know, I told you that GASB said you get to use your expected rate of return to value your liabilities, currently 7.25%. Same discount rate for funding as for GASB, except when we do our analysis for you to set your expected return on assets, you know, we do this building block approach. Those of you who have been around for a while have seen this. We start with price inflation. We add the weighted real return based on your asset allocation. We subtract expenses, and we put in a risk adjustment. Well, it's the expenses part. When we subtract expenses in the derivation of your expected return on assets, we calculate that return net of investment expenses and also net of administrative expenses. GASB says when you're setting a discount rate for financial reporting purposes, you can use the expected return on assets, and it should be net of investment expenses, but not net of administrative expenses. GASB deals with administrative expenses as a separate cash flow that they figure isn't really directly related to your return on assets, and therefore they've separated the two. So we're in a little bit of a spot here. So now that actually gets us, I know you've all read this ahead of time, that gets us into, we're through now the bottom of two, where it talks about how that, you know, you for funding, you do your investment return net of both investment and administrative expenses. Well, if GASB says that you're only allowed to do this net of investment expenses, not administrative expenses, just to give you a number to throw around, roughly speaking, your administrative expenses are about 12 basis points. We got this from our last experience study, and there's a table on page 3 that shows how that's derived. So I'm going to use 12 basis points as a percentage of assets as your current level of administrative expenses. And I will certainly, and sometime through this, I'm going to say administrative when I mean investment or the other way around. So just always check me on that. But the 12 basis points is your administrative expenses.
Just a question on that, if I may. You know, the law allows us to not include in administrative expenses any capital expenditures for technology. Do these numbers include that, or do they just go on what are reported administrative expenses are net of any technology?
I believe that what they include here, and I know this is true, I know the answer to that question for Ventura because I was there on Monday and they asked that question, they answered it. I believe that what is reported to us would only include expenses that are in fact charged against current operations. It would not include expenses that are capitalized. Do we know that for certain?
Well, it includes legal. It does include.
Right.
I don't have that much for IT hardware. It's probably all included at this point.
Okay, yeah. So that would be a distinction to make. By the way, regardless of how we do this, you know, we would need to, we'd have to decide how we're going to, what we're going to include, yeah, either way. All right, so now we're in the, if we don't do anything, if we don't bring this to you, the sort of the autopilot plan or reaction would be that, well, I guess we're going to use 7.25 for funding. But then for GASB, since we're not supposed to back out the administrative expenses are roughly 12 basis points, so we would use 7.37, 7.25 plus 12 basis points, 7.37% as our discount rate for financial reporting. Now, so the first thing that means is that now your two liability numbers are going to be a little bit different. So we lose that ease of explanation of having the liabilities match. The second thing is, and this is one of these actuarial aesthetics again, you know, when we recommend a discount rate to you, we do the analysis with the expected returns and the inflation expenses, and then when we're all done, it gets rounded to either the nearest quarter point or historically you sometimes use the nearest tenth of a point. But we really don't use the exact numbers of any of the components except to get to sort of an odd-looking total. And then the recommendation acknowledges what I call the illusion of precision, you know, that we really don't know that it's 7.37. And so we set it in these quarter-point increments. So one of the things that would make us a little nervous about the 7.37 is, number one, it looks as though we are suddenly, you know, measuring this stuff exactly to two decimals because of those 12 basis points of investment return. Of administrative expense, 12 basis points of administrative expense. It also makes that almost like a separate new assumption. Whereas right now, you don't ever take a vote on, we're going to assume 12 basis points. Right? That is simply one of the components that's built into your 7.25. We think that that is the appropriate way to go. So if choice A is to, well, let's keep going in order. So that's one reason why simply taking the 12 basis points, adding it to the GASB return, we do not believe is the most satisfactory path to take. One, because you lose that match between the two, and you lose it for a fairly, you know, unanticipated reason. It's not a policy decision. It's just this kind of quirk of where you put expenses. And then the other thing is, it leads to the GASB investment return assumption as a fairly odd-looking number like 7.37. So how do we get around this? What's that?
And we'll be criticized for it.
And you'll be criticized for it. So how do we get around this? Well, now this is where, having worked in this industry a long time, I tend to think about where do you want to be 5 years from now. 5 years from now, once GASB is sort of an established thing, I think it would be really good if you could end up, and this is, if you could end up having consistency between the GASB measure and the funding measure. And since GASB is insisting that you do the discount rate without taking out the administrative expenses, one way to keep that match would be to change your method for setting your discount rate for funding to do expenses, administrative expenses, outside of the discount rate. That is to set the discount rate net of investment expenses only. Now, that means, though, that you're going to have to go through a transition. This often happens. You know, you have a place you'd like to get to because you really think that in years 5 through 50, it would be good to have these things the same. But getting from where you are now to there is going to be a pain. And so we're here to talk about what would have to happen if you were to try to make that transition and what are the complications that you'd have to deal with. But with understanding, the motivation is that we believe that if we were doing this all from scratch, that having the administrative expenses outside of the investment return would be a good place to end up, and also it would give you the consistency with GASB. Now, I'm already starting getting some puzzled looks here, so let me just pause at a second and see if there's any questions so far. I want to now talk about, well, gee, that's not so bad, Paul. Why don't you just, next time you do our investment return assumption, derive it on a basis that doesn't include the administrative expenses. That means you're probably going to have a separate assumption. And by the way, this is what corporate plans do and Taft-Hartley plans do. They have a separate loading, a separate expense assumption that's usually phrased in dollars. And that way it's very sort of clear and transparent. This is what our assumed expenses are. We would include it in our experience analysis. We tune it up every 3 years. Okay. So far, it doesn't sound too bad. Well, the complication that comes in, which is...
this is why you're leaving on March 7th.
Yeah. So where are we so far? In the middle of page 3, you know, we talk about how the other approach would be to leave the investment return at 7.25 instead of increasing it by the 12 basis points. If you do that for funding, what that actually means is, again, because we're having this conversation not when we're doing an experience study, you know, because GASB's coming up this year, and so the reason that's bringing this to you now is whatever we might do in the next experience study, we need to determine what you want to do for the next valuation solely with regard to this issue on the administrative expenses. Now, we describe in the bottom of page 3, going into page 4, there's about 5 items there, and they talk about what is described in the middle of page 3 as there's a substantive complication. And this involves how the administrative expenses, how the cost of administrative expenses is in fact allocated between the employer and the members. Now this gets to, I made this side comment to some of the folks before the meeting, you know, did you know that the administrative expenses, which run about 12 basis points, did you know that in fact those are being underwritten by both the employer and the members? And did you know how much of the 12 points is in effect being paid by the employer and how much is in effect being paid by the members? I suspect the answer to both those questions, the first one might be yes, but it's probably no. And I guarantee you that you don't know what the actual split is. So this gets to, again, I'm going to use the word transparency. Right now, by including the administrative expenses implicitly, The item 2 at the bottom of 3 going into the top of 4 talks about the fact that unlike GASB, which would have an explicit loading for administrative expenses, right now your loading for administrative expenses is implicit in the expected return on assets. That makes it kind of hard to say, you know, when you start asking, well, who does that actually affect? You have to do some fairly complicated calculations because the way that the expenses are allocated is built into the way your liabilities are measured. It's built into the discount rate. So here again, 5 years from now, we think that there would be an advantage, now that we're talking about administrative expenses and who pays them, to have a more transparent, more explicit method. And then we can fight about how you want to do it because there's going to be an open question in terms of what is the current allocation of administrative expenses between the employer and the members. Is that the right allocation? What would you propose as an alternative? But at least you'll have that topic explicit and exposed so that you can talk about it on its own terms. So that is the sort of the hard work version. The much less work version is to say we don't want to mess with funding. You know, I thought you told us over and over that GASB was not going to force us to revisit funding. Okay, so if that's the will of the board, then we're back to, okay, well, what are we going to do with the GASB number? And as I said, the sort of the autopilot version would be to increase the GASB expense, the GASB earnings assumption from 7.25 to 7.37. I'll call that option B1. Option A is you adjust your funding, basically to match GASB. You pull the administrative expenses out of the earnings assumption and deal with it on its own terms. Okay, that's option A. Option B is you leave funding alone and you do all of your adjustments within the GASB side of the calculation. B1 is where you increase the earnings assumption from 7.25 up to 7.37. There's another possible way to do this. We've never seen this done because this is all brand new. The other possible way to do this is to say, for GASB purposes, we'll still use the same 7.25 assumption, exactly the same 7.25 assumption, but for GASB purposes, it will be deemed to be net of investment expenses, but gross of administrative expenses. So this means that even though it looks like you have the same discount rate, in fact, you do have the same discount rate, in one case, for funding, it's based upon investment earnings net of administrative expenses. And for accounting, it's based on expected earnings not net of administrative expenses. There's nothing in GASB, to our knowledge, that says that you have to use exactly the same discount rate for both. And so in this case, we would actually be a little bit more conservative. Did I get that right, John? We'd be more conservative for GASB because for funding, we're assuming that we're earning enough to cover those 12 basis points. Whereas for GASB, we're assuming that of the 7.75, you're not going to pull out 12 basis points to pay administrative expenses.
7.25.
Oh, no, you're not pulling out the 12 basis points. You're not pulling out the 12 basis points out of the 7.25.
Right, what you said 7.75.
Well, that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure. We are following you.
Oops, thank you. That's good.
That was good.
That's good. Right.
So we are not pulling the 12 points out of the 7.25, thank you, in order to fund a minute, in order to cover the expense.
So basically keeping two sets of books? It's probably way over.
Well, I mean, it does mean... Well, see, the thing is, unless you change your funding, remember, we're kind of, and this, we are not yet at the point of this being a recommendation, but we don't know how to be coy with you. We really kind of, thinking 5 years out, if we could actually go to the more explicit approach for funding, we think that'd be a good place to get to. Okay, so we want you to at least give that consideration. But if that is not the direction that you want to go, then you're going to have inconsistent numbers. They're going to be inconsistent. And so you can either have them be different numbers based on the same assumptions, or they can be the same number based on slightly different assumptions.
So you're not giving us a recommendation for any action today? You just want to
present this is,
for us?
This is not agendized for action today. This is just discussion. Now, we do want to kind of move this along because we want to get it in time for this year's work. But now we haven't yet got into the nuts and bolts of what would happen if we pull the administrative expenses out of the earnings assumption for funding and deal with the allocation between the members and the employer. We've got some numbers in here on how that works, but at least at the concept level, I see some questions, so I'm happy to stop and have a little discussion where we are so far.
Yeah, so I just want to back up to last year when we did the experience study and we adjusted the rate assumption, the expected rate of return. The actual calculation that you presented to us at that meeting was 7.08%, if I recall correctly.
That's the one that would have been the most consistent with the confidence level that was implicit in your assumption from the previous study. That's right. That was not a recommendation.
And then the board somehow came to a decision to round up, which in my math I had said in that meeting, if you're rounding, you would round 7.08 down to 7%. But we rounded up to 7.25%. And so didn't we really, by virtue of that rounding, take the administrative expense of 12 basis points out anyway?
I don't think so. I really, because that would only be true if our little model that got you to the 7.8 out was somehow the right answer. It is not. It's the first part of a conversation. And that, you know, when... But what is true, though, is that if the 12 basis points were not in there, then the 7.08 would have been 7.20. And if you think of the 7.25 as a rounding of the 7.08, which I do not, by the way, But if you think of it that way, you're right. It would be easier to get there. So this does mean that the next time that we do that, if you were to pull the administrative expenses out of the expected return calculation, that is going to give you 12 basis points of breathing room when we do the next calculation. But it's still, once we get the 7.08 or whatever the odd number is, then we look at what other systems do, then we look at where you are today, then we look at the confidence levels, and we come up with recommendations that are to an even 25 basis points. I would not characterize it as simply taking the raw number and rounding it. It's the raw number sort of gives you a comparison point based on where you were the last time you went through the process, but then you really bring the other considerations, like, you know, how big a step do you want to take, what other systems are doing, etc. So it's less mechanical than simply taking the 7.8 and rounding it, because you're right, if we were just rounding it, it would have rounded down. But there actually it's more subjective than that.
Okay, but by virtue of going to 7.25, we if we were to do that calculation today with the same yep. data set that we had then, we could say, well, we add back the 12 basis points, we're still at 7.25.
I think that's true. So that where you happen, see, again, just so you know, when I come into this conversation, all I remember is a 7.25. You know, the fact that along the way, at some point, there was a 7.08 on the table. For me, what you adopted was 7.25, and that had as part of its derivation the 12 basis points. But you're quite right. If you look at the 7.08, which is the number that actually explicitly had a 12 included in it, you're remembering that little table, you're right that when you moved to 7.25, you could almost say you've already pulled the investment, sorry, already pulled the administrative expenses out of the calculation. It works in this case. I don't want to hide behind that too much, but, you know, if that gets you there, yeah. So, anything else as far as we're going so far?
Well, you said this is not an action item today. You wanted us to think about it. When would you be coming back to us at some point based on direction that we want you to? I mean, I yes. think based on what you're saying is we need you to come back with what it will look like.
But we would like to get a sense of the board of what I'm calling, and I know we don't use these terms in here, and I apologize for that. You know, option A, which is revisit your funding assumption to pull the administrative expenses out. And then of option B, which is leave the funding assumption alone and either jack up the GASB rate to disexclude, is that a word? You know, to not offset for the administrative expenses, or B2.
Two sets of books.
Well, which means you have two. Well, you're going to have
funding and okay.
Okay, you're going to have two sets of books.
Okay,
let's be real clear.
Until you get to the point where GASB changes his mind again.
Well, GASB spent 5 years on this. This is going to be. They're not changing this stuff. And they really view administrative expenses as something unrelated to investment. So they're not going to reverse themselves on that. So you have two sets of books.
Okay,
and the question is, to what extent And with what level of effort do you want them to coordinate, and how? And again,
I would prefer option B, but that's whatever.
Yeah. Now, and then within B, then there's B1. You know, B1 is where you increase the GASB rate up to 7.37. We would urge you to consider option B2, which is that, remember, these earnings assumptions, okay, you know, GASB says you have to meet the standards of practice. Okay. Well, here's a fact. There is never going to be a situation where one earnings assumption meets the standards of practice and another earnings assumption that differs from it by 12 basis points fails to meet the standards of practice. Okay. The standards of practice are not precise to the level of 12 basis points. So you can, with a perfectly straight face, say that we have two different earnings assumptions. They both look like the same number. They both look like 7.25. They both produce the same discount rate, but one of them for funding is net of expenses. And why is that? It's because that's your historical practice and you chose not to change it. But for accounting, you did what you were told. And so you use the 7.25. And there, it's actually a little bit more conservative, you know, because you're actually then, you're really assuming what would be on an equivalent basis would be the 7.37. You leave the 7.25, but then you also deal with the expenses separately. And that way you get the same number, same discount rate, and the only difference in the two sets of books is that you have different expenses.
Help me understand how we deal with it separately.
Right.
Okay. So here's what happens. Well, first let's look and see, and this is where John, you may want to chime in here. If we if you look at, again, on page 4, which talks about that if you were to, I'm doing item 3 at the toward the top of page 4. Okay, if you move from dealing with the expenses implicitly, which is described here as item 2, to dealing with the expenses explicitly, which is described here as item 1, then, well, what that means is when we're calculating the contribution, I mean, we have to make sure that we collect enough money from the employers to not only pay benefits, but also defer the reasonable expenses of the plan. Right now, we do that, kind of, by having a slightly lower discount rate, although as your trustees pointed out, when you're around to 7.25, you can argue whether you're really doing that. But in theory, we are building that into a slightly higher contribution rate based on a slightly lower discount rate because it's been reduced by the 12 basis points. If you don't do that, then the contributions that are calculated based on the 7.25 discount rate are enough to cover future benefits and future investment expenses, but they are no longer enough to cover future administrative expenses. So we would add a new assumption. We would probably do it in dollars as we would calculate. You would look at your administrative expense experience over the last 5 years, like we always do, and we come up with a number. And John, what's the round number in terms of dollars?
Call it
$6 million. So currently, that 12 basis points, if you turn that into dollars, about $6 million. So what we would have is a new assumption, and that is that your contributions are going to be loaded, is the term we use, and we have added on to them an amount that's expected to produce $6 million, which is our expected return administrative expenses for the year. And we would probably take the $6 million, divide it by payroll.
Why did they ever do this? Why? I mean,
really,
it's just crazy. I mean, we had 18 basis points was what we understood to be the amount of money that, and it came out of our, you know, our what we made our investments, and now they're saying we have to separate all that out. I mean, it's crazy to me.
Well, although, you know, they're not actually saying
it seems like it's making it more complicated for us to do the job we want to do.
You know, I think it's more complicated.
Maybe to me.
Compared to where you were, you know, before this meeting, which was you didn't even know this was going on.
Yeah. I loved it.
Yes, I'm with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go on vacation together.
But the idea would be that you would have an explicit loading, and that way, and then you would have to make a decision. Suppose we take that $6 million and we divide it by payroll, and what does that give us, John?
Roughly 90 basis points.
90 basis points, okay? 90 basis points. So now that means that when you'd be collecting your normal cost as a percentage of pay, you'd be collecting your amortization payment as a percentage of pay, and you would be collecting 90 basis points as a percentage of pay. The question then is, when we take that 90 basis points and we put in the actuarial report, whose rate do we add it to? Do we add it only to the employer rate, which is what you would do if you were a corporate plan or a Taft-Hartley plan? But I got to be fair, that's a little bit of a false comparison because neither corporations nor Taft-Hartley even have member contributions.
Can you add the rate as equally distributed the way it is now?
Well, that's the interesting one. So let's do three possibilities. One is if the employer said, you know what, we end up paying for all this stuff anyway, why don't you just have us pay for it? That's always, you know,
have
possible.
What? Come back?
That could happen. Let's just have the employer pay for it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That could happen.
Yeah, okay.
The other one you could say was, well, you know, maybe you've got CalPERS in mind, the 50-50 split of normal costs. You know, this is not normal costs. These are expenses. But maybe you just divide it by 2. That would be a possible way to do it. Or you could do what Mr. Tellis just suggested is try to reproduce the current split. That's going to be hard to do exactly. And now here's why. And here's where, again, John's going to watch my back on this one. You know, how would you do that? Well, what we actually did was we ran the valuation using 7.25 and came up with the normal cost. Then we ran the valuation at 7.37, came up with that normal cost. Am I okay so far, John? And then we took the difference. Now, if you're only looking at the normal cost, okay, if you look and see, what we actually did was we did the member rates. I'm making this a little confusing. Let's back up a step. The problem is that by having the expenses in the discount rate, it affects three things. It affects the member rate calculation,
yeah.
Right? Because we're using 7.25 instead of 7.37. It affects the employer normal cost calculation because we're using 7.25 instead of 7.37. But it also affects the employer's unfunded liability payment because we're measuring the liability at 7.25 instead of 7.37. Now, that's the part that gets tricky. I can pretty easily tell you what the change in the member contribution rates is between 725 and 737. That's a number we have, right? Mm-hmm. And that number is about
about 30 basis
points. About 30 basis points, about one-third of the total 90. We could do that for the normal cost of the employer, also an easy calculation before and after. But to do it for the unfunded gets tricky, and here's why. The unfunded is liability minus assets. So I can calculate what the liability would be valued at 7.37 instead of 7.25. That would be an increase in liability, that would be a change in that liability. And I can amortize it over 18 years. But the problem is the assets have in them higher contributions than would have been made if you hadn't been including this in the expenses all along. So there's actually assets in there that have been accumulated to cover the expenses that are implicitly in the liabilities. And there's no way to unscramble that egg. So what we really did was we got the total by taking 12 basis points, converting to $6 million, divided by payroll, getting 90 basis points. Okay? We got the member change by doing the member rates at 7.25, doing the member rates at 7.37, taking the difference, that's about 30 basis points. So whether you knew it or not, your member rates currently and through your entire history have been about 30 basis points higher than they would have been in order to cover a share of administrative expenses. That's something we didn't know. Okay, that's this implicit, non-transparent, current policy. So then how much does the employer pay? Well, I could try to do the normal cost, and I could try to unscramble the unfunded liability, or I can just take 90 minus 30 and get 60. How's that, right? So right now, whether you knew it or not, that $6 million is being split about two-thirds, one-third. Two-thirds employer, one-third member. Mm-hmm. Which means, based on that rough justice, if you wanted to just maintain status quo, you could say, okay, Mr. Actuary, under option A, go to the explicit assumptions of $6 million, also known as 90 basis points, and whatever it is going forward, split it two-thirds, one-third. That's another way to go. That, I think you could say, is trying to reproduce the status quo, but on a more transparent basis. How's that?
That sounds better to me.
Karen? I'm going to advocate 50-50. It costs money to run a retirement fund, and both, to me, employer and employee should share, whether it's unfunded, normal, what have you, especially in this post-PEPRA world, there's an expectation that it's 50-50. And, if it's a third and two-thirds now, yes, it puts more burden on the employee, but I think that's what's expected. Tell me why it won't work.
It'll work. Oh, it'll work. But the immediate counter argument would be that there are more people in this plan than just the actives. Suppose you got to the place where you had a very mature plan with a zillion retirees and a very small number of actives. See, that's because it's the thing about the two-thirds, one-third. One way of looking at that is that you're splitting the normal cost. You're actually splitting this into three pieces. You're splitting it into one-third past stuff and two-thirds normal cost, and then the normal cost is being split 50-50.
All right, and I get that, and that's a very valid argument, but the bottom line is there are retirees, and they didn't pay this, and I'm not just speaking as an employer, but I guess it's an equity issue to me. I mean, then we would perpetuate it forever and a day, and at what point is there, I'm trying to look at it as an equity issue, and you're right, it's very difficult to resolve.
Well, I think though, I mean, equity is in the eye of the beholder.
Can
I think the fact though that we are able to calculate explicitly how much the members are currently paying. That's the one we can actually put a number on, and that's the 30 basis points.
Okay. And so that means the employer's paying two-thirds, and that means the employer's paying not only their share, but for those retirees.
Yeah, I think, in effect, you're right. What we're saying, remember, but the unfunded liability, the cost associated with liabilities other than the actives, has always been on the employer. It's the nature of the plan. Remember, right now.
I understand that.
Okay.
But there's been this cosmic, seismic shift that it shouldn't be that way.
But only for normal costs, only for the next year of service. So actually, the more we talk about this, the more the two-thirds, one-third, I think, is compatible with PEPRA. It recognizes that the total 90 is part normal cost and part unfunded liability, which is where the retirees live, right? And what it's saying is it turns out that the members are currently paying about one-third of that. And so if you match that with another third from the employer, call that the normal cost, then you really do have a 50-50 split of something other than the total, and that's appropriate because the total includes something that really isn't normal cost. So I think you
and
really
I understand
can
that.
Get
How,
there. Yeah.
I'm going to diverge a little bit here. Is it historical that we didn't have unfunded liability till GASB came along? I mean, it was sort of out. Well, no. I mean, like having... No, we've always
big as a house.
Okay, is that because retirees didn't pay enough in, and/or employees didn't pay enough in, to
there's a lot of reasons.
There's a lot of
okay,
reasons.
Okay, that's yeah. I mean,
hey, do you remember 2008? That little thing.
Well, yeah. Okay, before that, let's just say before 2008, we still had an unfunded liability.
Right.
Because the inherent nature of a retirement plan is that you never have enough money in there to pay off.
No, I think one of the things is that when benefits were increased around the turn of the century, SB 400 and AB 1937, whatever it was, right? When those were put in, those were put in increasing benefits not only for future service but also for past service. And those increases in the past service costs were paid for by the employer. When they bargained it, they had a cost study showing that. So the fact that the past is on the employer is about as well established as any of your funding policies.
I'm not disagreeing with you there.
Right.
There is a sentiment out there, and I'm not saying I buy into it totally, but there is a sentiment out there that was not appropriate, and we need to change that moving forward.
That sentiment is, at this point, is relatively narrow. It's not in CalPEPRA, for example. CalPEPRA doesn't go there at all, not even a step in that direction.
I guess what
changed.
I'm saying is
it's been
the
changed.
Taxpayer. And I'm not saying they're always right. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying there, and that's not because of what's happened in the recent past, but there is a sentiment that if you're getting a benefit, it should be borne equally. And they don't get the difference between normal versus unfunded liability and all that. I can go out there and try and explain it and how it is. I'm just saying when this opportunity presents itself, it means we'll need to explain it so that they feel they're not getting taken advantage of.
Well, in spite of the fact that if you characterize this as taking advantage of them, which I would not necessarily agree.
I'm not saying that. Okay. I'm saying that's what
But that is your current practice.
I know it is. And that my point is people want it changed.
Well, you know, again, I always get nervous when you say, well, the people out there don't understand any of this stuff, but they have opinions, and we should follow those opinions. I can't go there either. You know, I mean, I understand. Believe me, I deal with this every day. I'm awake, but at some point, you know, you as trustees, as your advisors, we are the ones that understand how this works, and you should make your decisions based on that informed perspective.
I know, and I'm criticized a lot because people see me wearing two hats. I actually am wearing one hat, trying to represent the county as citizens and employees as people in the system.
Yeah. Because, you know, you also have your members out there, and again, I don't want to sound too partisan here, but to have to explain to the members why they went from paying a third of something and then now paying a half of something, And as a result of a GASB conversation that wasn't supposed to affect funding in the first place, you know, that's also going to be a tricky conversation.
Well, we had to do that a lot over the last years.
But the fact that this turns out to be kind of one-third, 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 two-thirds normal cost but 50-50, one-third, you know, basically past service costs, that's a fairly elegant result that you could point to and say that you have a grounded, quantitative basis for your decision.
Harvey?
I'm going to pull out my poor country lawyer card at this point. I kind of like to come back to some basics in this conversation. We assume a certain amount of money. Let's forget about rate. Let's talk about dollars. We're required to credit interest at the assumed rate to our reserve accounts in dollars at the end of the year. Actually, we do it twice a year. Happens. So we assume that we're going to have jingle in our pockets of 7.25% of the assets of the system to credit to our accounts, okay, actual dollars. Those dollars are net of expenses, investment expenses, whatever we have, because if we have to pay those expenses throughout the year, we don't have that money to credit to our accounts. Mm-hmm. So from a funding standpoint, in setting contributions, it makes absolute sense to say the money that we have to credit the accounts is net of every expense that we have, investment, administrative, or otherwise, because otherwise we have a shortfall, and then there's an unfunded liability that falls 100% on the employer. So we need to know that we're going to make net of all expenses that 7.25% to have those dollars available. I respectfully suggest that we not let the GASB accounting dictate and force us into changing our funding policy, which we have, and we have an interest crediting policy, and we have these policies in place. Why let an accounting creature change our entire approach to crediting interest and where our assumed rate is, and that it's got to be net of all expenses to do that? Let this be for GASB. What's it going to do? It's going to show up once a year in the CAFR that the auditors.
Well, and that was his B2 option,
well,
right?
Yeah.
I agree with that.
We already have separate books for different reasons. We know there are different. You look at the accounting, and it comes out differently for different purposes. So I'm in trouble from a policy standpoint for the board to say, you know what? When we have to meet GASB, this is what our books look like. We're setting contribution rates in the funding of the system. This is what our books look like. Paul told us this for the last 3 years while all these GASB things were going on, that this is only accounting. You got all these slides. This is only accounting. It's not going to affect your funding.
That's fine with
me,
then.
I don't see why we're going to change our funding where we know we're going to pay investment expense. We know we're going to pay administrative expense. And we know we're going to pay expensive technology. And when we do that, we don't have those dollars to spread to our accounts, right?
Okay.
That's how we set contributions. I would. Yes.
Touch that.
I agree.
Paul?
I will respectfully have to agree to disagree with counsel on this. I think that this is an option for you and that you are not necessarily constrained by your prior practice. Counsel described that under your current approach, which is true, investment income comes in and you pay expenses out of that. However, you could just as validly have built into your contributions a contribution for administrative expenses. And so now, when you're looking to credit interest, the interest that you have available to credit would be your investment return net only of investment expenses. Then you would have a separate pair of cash flows. You'd have contributions coming in explicitly to fund administrative expenses, and you would pay the administrative expenses not out of investment return, but out of this newly identified contribution stream. So that is what Harvey described is your current practice, but that doesn't mean it's the only way you can do this. And again, there are advantages in terms of transparency and having a clear understanding of how administrative expenses work that would be obtained by the more explicit approach. However, if you want to leave things alone, there's certainly nothing that compels you to make a change. But the idea that somehow that that's the only reasonable way to do this, I would have to disagree.
I thought that's what GASB required, is that we have to make change.
Well, but only for financial reporting.
Oh,
Harvey's
right.
Absolutely correct that there's nothing in the GASB change that requires you to change your funding. That we certainly agree on.
Our administrative expense is already transparent. It's not like we're hiding anything anyway.
Well, although if I had asked you before this meeting, your administrative expenses are $6 million. How much of that's paid for by the members?
Well, now I know.
Now you know.
30 basis points.
Just so you know, again, we had this conversation 2 days ago. That's a legitimate answer. You can say, well, thank you. Now that we know how this works, we want to leave it just like it is. That's a fair play. I think that maybe where counsel and your actuary are disagreeing a little bit is to what extent is that the only reasonable thing to do. I think it would also be reasonable to go to the more explicit approach, which is why we're bringing it to you guys, so you can make a decision.
Yeah. The only reason
why. Okay, thank you.
Jeez, come on, you guys.
Very good, very good.
No.
Meryl?
The whole idea of bringing this to the board today was for educational purposes only. We specifically asked Siegel to take off the last few pages of their memo that were their recommendations.
Right.
Because we wanted to provide education on the issue to the board. What we need at this point is direction from the board for Siegel to come back with explicit recommendations, or are they going to be implicit recommendations for the board? So
yeah.
I think that's where we are. We've got other presenters ready today, but I wanted to, this was education. I hope the board was educated.
So I'm hearing you say there's option A, there's option B, and under B, there's B1 and B2. B2 is basically for financial purposes, reporting, we go to this one-third, two-third allocation on expenses.
No, B2, the difference between B1 and B2 is really how you measure the liabilities. Do you use a higher discount rate, 7.37 in our example, and then have different numbers? Or do you use a 7.25 but tell the auditors that it's not net of administrative expenses? In either case, either B1 and B2, there's going to be, and actually John's going to have to explain this one to me, it turns out that the way GASB handles expenses, they really only look at the actual expenses. And the actual expenses are basically included in the employer's expense. But you don't get into the one-third, two-third. For GASB, it's all going to flow into a component of the employer's expense.
Yeah. So, Paul, thanks for the explanation here. What we would like you to do is, on a future meeting, come back with explicit or implicit or specific recommendations.
All right.
The last two pages you took out.
The sense of the board we're trying to get is, are you open to making any changes in funding? Which means you're going to stick with the implicit approach. Now that you know what it is, you're going to put that back on the shelf and do something else.
I think we had an opportunity last year when we addressed all of these issues that maybe this should have been mentioned.
When you come back, I want to know the ramifications of no. I mean, I have no problem with no, but I want to know the ramifications.
Well, should we not actually take some type of vote or at least discuss?
We?
Do we want him to bring us back?
I heard
back?
Him say
this
we don't have to change our funding.
Item.
It's just an education.
Do we even want this to come back?
I mean, we have all these other things this board needs to address in the coming months. I mean, at what point do we make this a priority?
What is the timing on this?
John, what do you think?
Let me ask this. If we take no action whatsoever, life moves on as we've been doing it. We'll adjust the GASB reporting, our reporting to comply with GASB's requirements. And our funding status stays the same. It's net of both investment and administrative.
Right.
It's more of a pure number, at least in my mind. Before we get to excess returns and smoothing, we dump all the other costs in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not. So any of the smoothing numbers or any of that or the contract tracking account, those are all reflect all of the costs, investment, administrative, IT, everything. And that's what we've been doing.
Keep doing that.
To continue that. I mean, my personal opinion, I think keep funding policy pure as we have, deal with the reporting requirements separately, and deal with the internal, the smoothing, the excesses and everything as we have been doing it, which seems to work.
Right. So then I think the only action then we would need, well, first of all, since we brought the issue to you, you would probably want to affirm that's what you want to continue to do. Whether that requires an action or not, I don't know, but, you know, just sort of for the record. But then on the GASB side, I think then we would come to you with the B1, the B2 choice. Because I think you are going to have to set the assumptions for GASB. Those assumptions are going to be different from funding, because that's what you decided when you decided not to change funding. So now you're going to have different assumptions, and there's two ways to do it. We will have a recommendation between those two ways, but I think you would have to take an action purely in terms of implementing GASB, unrelated to funding. You would have to choose between B1 and B2. B1 is you take the GASB rate and increase it explicitly for expenses, so it would move from 7.25 up to 7.37, that's B1. B2 is you would use the same discount rate, but for disclosure, you would describe it as being net only of investment expenses. Yeah, and by the way, we'd have to run that by your auditors too, because that's new.
So the direction I think the board wants you is to come back with your recommendations with regards to the GASB reporting requirements.
Right.
And no change to funding.
Yeah. And again, if there's anyone on the board that disagrees with that, it'd probably be good to speak up now. But we're getting the sense of the board. We are getting the sense of the board.
The only
thing. Can we add to that at the same meeting, having the auditor here to give their opinion?
He's here.
He's here already.
Different auditor.
It's not the county auditor.
Rather
than have them here, maybe have staff and Siegel consult with them to confirm what their recommendations are,
if they're not
acceptable by the auditor. Jerry.
I'm still interested in the expenses being split the same way that they have been, and some explanation of that in when you come back to let us know what that option is and how that option works.
You mean on an explicit basis? Because if I have the sense of the direction of the board, because we are leaving funding alone, it will continue to be split the way it always has been.
Okay.
Right? Fine. Okay, I'm good here.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Everybody's in agreement with that direction?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's take a 10-minute break to 11.